Hi, this is Bob Sorrentino from Italian Roots and Genealogy, and I'm here today with Becky Clemente, and we're going to talk about her family and her research. So, welcome, Becky. Thanks for being here.
Oh, you're most welcome. My pleasure.
So, I always like to start these with, when and why, and did you start this research, and
Sure.
what got you the bug?
Well, I sort of inherited the bug. This actually, I'm sort of carrying the mantle, kind of, so to speak. Many years ago, both my parents decided that they were going to work on their genealogy. And so they went where they could, which most likely were the regional libraries for the Latter-day Saints, to find information and talking with family. And actually, my dad had started even earlier when the new technology was a reel-to-reel recorder in the 60s. He actually, his mom and dad came up, where we were living in Michigan at the time. So they came, and during that visit, he tape recorded them and tried to gather as many of the stories that have been told in the family. And then eventually, my grandparents spoke Sicilian. So dad translated those things for us, and those eventually became part of a history of the family book that he put together. And so both my parents wrote family histories. My dad wrote his own history as well. And then my involvement was I had gotten involved in learning about, in the early 80s, this newfangled computer thing. So eventually I scanned pictures, typed, and helped them assemble. And then early on worked with what I think at the time was one of the few genealogy pieces of software available at the time, was Family Tree Maker. So laid out the genealogy as best we could, and printed what we could and distributed it. My parents have passed, actually, my mom only a few months ago at almost 100. So I continued, and now the genealogy originally I uploaded to the Latter-day Saints, because at the time it was one of the few internet sites for electronic genealogy. So I thought, well, let's put it up there. And then actually, insanely, I have built the tree in Ancestry as well. So it's crazy, but I do it in two places right now. And so now what I've been able to do is try to extend beyond where my parents could have done genealogy with the tools that they had available, at the time. Because even now, even with technology, it's a labor-intensive love affair. And as you know, to get things, find things, and make sure they're connected, and all the serendipity that happens with doing family research. So that's sort of what happens. So I've sort of, I guess, formally and informally, sort of become that the genealogy person for the family this way. So
Yeah, well, there's always one of us that's that crazy. And
evidently.
I have trees in three places, so don't feel bad.
No, I know. It's Well, no, and actually, it's now that you can download your files, it's easy to transport them into different places. And I actually recently did that for myself as well, because I've gotten so frustrated trying to get kinds of printouts that I value and like to see. And Family Tree Maker used to do a kinship file that was a wonderful printout. My God, and actually in the book my mom put together, we have the stories, and then we have all these kinship files, and it's a really quick way to kind of overview your family. And so I actually downloaded recently Roots Magic and brought my files in, just so I could, although they don't quite do this kinship thing, but they do a lot more than some of the other services that are out there. And it galls me to have to pay a lot of money for something that gets very expensive, because it doesn't lay things out the way I might want to see them. So yeah, so I'm now in three places as well. I came back to my local computer, actually, is what's happened. So
Yeah, and I know it's tough because they all do something a little bit different. And
they
that's what I
do.
find. You go to one place and you get a chart. Oh, I want that chart that way,
I
but I'd
know.
like to see it this way, but
Yeah.
they don't have it. The other guy has it.
I know. I know. So I'm trying not to go too crazy with that, but I'm hoping to try to do some, you know, better representation and also helping me as I'm going through. Because obviously, it's the farther back you go and you find more and more people just keeping track in your head, you need some help to make sure. And in cultures where names are repeated and passed down, keeping track of which Bartholomew are we talking about? Who is this Josephina we're talking about? Is it this century? That so anyway, you need it.
So that's great that you, that long ago that they actually did the tapes and everything. I'm working with somebody now, and we're gonna do a little series on it. He got a job in Boston in the, I guess it was the late 70s. Working in the North End with the, you know, Italian immigrants.
Yes.
And he tape recorded all of these people.
Wow, how fabulous.
And he wrote books on it, but he still has the tape, some of them on, you know, some of them are digital. I think some may even still be on tape. But we're going to do a series where we're actually going to, you know, play people who were born in, you know, 1900, 1905, talking about the boat ride and talking about, you know, what it was like in Italy when they came, what it was like in America when they came.
Yeah.
So, you know, I listened to a couple of them and it's I'm getting goosebumps now just talking about it. It's just mind blowing. You know,
well, I think the value in trying to encourage people, even if they can't go that far back, just right now, just even with their own grandparents, if they're still alive, or parents, to try to capture some of, especially the stories that we tend to repeat because there's something about them that speak to us. I mean, to capture that is so valuable. Because even getting prepared for this today, going back and realizing that in what my dad wrote, you know, my own grandfather was remembering his grandfather, a story way back in 1810. And had that not been captured, I'd be clueless about some of the interesting things that have happened. And to get an insight on what life was like for my grandfather from Sicily, and then my mom's family is from Carovigli, Italy. And so even just getting that insight gives you an appreciation of where people came from, their joys, their struggles. There's no way to capture that except through the capturing the words. And I think it's so valuable. I hope people will take advantage. And now that your phone can be your tape recorder as well, it's not like my dad hauling out the wall and sack reel to reel and setting it up and having to have people sit right there. And so some things have become easier in that regard, if people would do that. And now we even have you know, software that can help with doing the typing, text-to-speech recognition, where I was typing my dad's handwritten notes into the computer, you know, so, so I encourage folks to take advantage.
We'll be right back.
Italian Roots and Genealogy is proudly sponsored by Your Dolce Vita and Dawn Matera, connecting people to their purpose in life and continuing their legacy. For more information, contact Dawn at www.yourdolcevita.com. So when did your grandparents arrive in America?
Well, my family's of two. My mom is an emigre and came through Ellis Island when she was 8 years old. So on my Lale Niyoshi side, my grandfather, Luigi, came to the United States several times to see if he and his brother could make it here. And so they tried a couple different times and finally came back to the United States to work, to be here for the 6 years that it took to be here. My mom emigrated here in 1929 and moved to Akron, Ohio area. So during that time, my grandfather worked in factory situations, also with Quaker Oats for a while. And also she and her sister and my grandmother came from Caudoville and settled. And there had been family, other family that were here in Akron as well. My dad's side, my grandfather, Baldassare, he had come over. His plan was to come over to earn money, but to go back and continue to buy land. My dad's family was a little better off than my mom's family. My mom's family are peasants that work the land. They came because life was getting very, very tough there. They would not have survived very well. My mom would almost said to her last, the best thing her father ever did was to come to the United States. It changed the whole trajectory of their lives. My grandpa Baldassare, he again earned money. He and then decided to come to the United States, and he worked for a while, actually for a very long time, at Quaker Oats. He was very gifted as a gardener, and so even part of his time there was tending the gardens of the president of Quaker Oats in Akron, Ohio. So my dad was actually all my my aunt and uncle on that side of the family were born here in the United States in Akron, Ohio. But my, and they worked for a very long time here when my grandpa came in about 1919 or so. And his dream was to earn as much money as they could. And they were going to, they actually did go back and repatriate to Sicily and were going to stay. So that's how my family came. So when someone asked what kind of generation, I says, well, I'm a one and a half. A first generation here on one side and a second generation here on the other side. So that's how they got here to to this country.
So Akron is interesting because you don't think about Italians going to Akron, Ohio. How did they wind up going there, you know, from...
I think as I look back at the history, there were opportunities to work in industry and on the railroads because my both sets of grandparents worked on the railroads for a while, and that was really rough work. Plus, they sometimes even lived in the cars on the side of the road, so on the side of the track, and just lived rough and a hard life doing that. And so they came for industry, and eventually my mom's dad, Luigi, worked actually in the rubber factory and retired out of Goodrich Rubber and Tire Company, although he was unemployed during the Depression for nearly 10 years and had to do odd jobs and things in order to survive. My mom talks about her coming to the United States as coming from poverty to poverty. But they came and worked in Youngstown and Canton and Akron. And Akron at the time was a booming place. A lot of industry was there. Three rubber manufacturers were there. And the Quaker Oats was a big deal as well there. So they came and worked. So they were mostly doing the manual labor and the things that, you know, sort of that part of that engine of what makes the United States the United States.
Well, yeah, and I, you know, that's true for, you know, most of them that came. They all did what they did. I mean, my mother's father worked. He was an iceman, and for some strange reason, people from Barrio were icemen. I don't know why, my grandmother's brother, I heard that he owned the company. I don't know if he owned it or he was, you know, maybe he was a manager or something, but in any event, you know, my grandfather and, you know, several of the uncles, several of my grandmother's, I guess, siblings, and they all worked in delivering ice in New York City for years and years and years. So what was some of the amazing things that you heard, whether it was here or back in Italy?
No, I'll tell you, one of the stories I'm trying to validate is one that's actually on my dad's side, and my grandpa Baldassare, he had a distant cousin. Let me find his name in case anybody recognizes the name in their family tree. I haven't yet gotten far enough back to connect with this, because obviously it's tough from here to find records from the 1700s. But it's a Vincenzo Arcado, and he had a brush with fame. He was a young shepherd boy tending in Sicily, tending some livestock, and he did this for many, many years. I think perhaps may have worked for his cousin, who was the mayor of the town. And one day he's just out tending his sheep, and he looks out there on the coastline and he sees the ship and some folks rowed ashore. So he goes out to see them, to say hello. He does not know who they are. He knows that they're wealthy because he can just tell by the way they're dressed and everything. And so he figures, you know, maybe he extends some hospitality. So he says, you know, they said, you know, we'd love to have some water. And so he takes them up to whatever his little house there looked like. And he decided he would give them wine. So they have some wine, and he actually kills a couple chickens to make soup. And so they stay and chat with him. When they go back down to the beach, they say, do you know who we are? And he says, no, he doesn't. Well, it turns out to be Queen Victoria and Prince Albert, and they had come to shore, and they actually asked him if he'd like to come and see what the ship looks like. So they row him out. They even ask him if he'd like to come back with them, which I think is very interesting in the story. I know that Queen Victoria often connected with folks that would be way out of what her circle of people would be. So I don't know how common some of this is. And I know that, what, 2 or 3 years ago, they had the movie Victoria and Abdul about this, the friendship that she had with this fellow. But anyway, he does not want to go back with them. They said, well, we'd like to give you something because they have hospitality. And they end up evidently giving him a gun. And they ask for his address, which he gives to the mayor. He's illiterate. He does not read or write. So off they go, off he goes, and they decide they were going to give him a title, captain of land and sea. And they end up mailing to him a uniform and actually some money, a pension. So when it comes, he receives the uniform, but he doesn't receive the pension. And he does not know that he has received and continues to get an annual pension until Queen Victoria dies. And he gets a final letter, and it's the postman that reads the letter to him. And it's the first time he finds out that there's been there. So years have passed. Well, he finds out that his mayor cousin has taken the money. And he ends up taking the cousin to court, and he wins his case. And he ends up with the money he's given at the time, which I don't know I had no idea how much the pension was. He ends up buying what I find out now is about 5 acres of land, and evidently decides to grow grapes and make wine and does very well for himself. And so I wrote the Royal Archives to see, because I'm assuming if this is all valid and true, there will be evidence of it in their records. So I wrote and gave some particular, I don't know if I'll hear back from them, but I thought I'll find out whether it's true. So that's the brush with fame that's in the story. So maybe if someone else knows this family story, we'll find out some more information about it. But for us, when we were little as kids, it was just sort of very enchanting story to think about. What was the serendipity of just sort of being there on one day and someone comes ashore and you're kind to them and hospitable, and what might happen because of that. So that's one of the family stories.
Yeah, that's a pretty cool story.
It is a cool story.
and you know, especially the fact that, you know, that they, I'm sure if they, if they were paying a pension. There's got to be a record of that someplace, because they were very meticulous with that stuff.
Oh, no, they were very meticulous. And evidently she did this. Mm-hmm. There are several incidences of where she gave a small pension to people as an extension. I think for me, what's interesting is that it was just done and continued to be done, say for the life of a person, rather than like a one-time thank you for what you did. You know, not knowing a lot about her as a person, but it's interesting. So we'll see if I find out anything down the road or not to validate the family story. So
yeah, well, I mean, you know, a story like that, you know, you would have to think it's credible, because that's a tough one to make up. You know,
no, it is. That is a very, especially when there is evidence that he did have the gun, the uniform came, and then obviously something. And I've always wondered, because actually reading my dad's family history is always interesting. I remember the first time reading through, there several times my grandfather Baltazar got into some scrapes and ended up in court. And so there were a couple of times he was arrested. I kept saying, oh my God, he's arrested again. What happened? So there would be these stupid disputes. So anyway, it caused me to think, where, if I could find the court records, you know, what would the court records say of those moments, if you could find them? And so it's made me think about this extension of genealogy beyond building your tree, but gathering, you know, this information. You know, how do you find these things to sort of say, yeah, this really happened, and here's how it was chronicled, you know, at the time. So it would be interesting when you're trying to validate why would he talk about these things if you're hoping had happened, rather than somebody elaborating on their life that may not be as exciting as they wanted it to be.
You know, it's interesting. I came across, with the help of Family Search, I came across a will of like my sixth great granduncle, fifth or sixth. And it was like this 43 page document. And you know, when I had it translated, you really get an insight into the persona of the person, as opposed to just, yes, you know, a fact. He was born this day and then died that day, and right, he lived over here and got married there. And, you know,
right.
You know, my grandmother comes from, my father's mom comes from a family, and they have their archives in the, they donated all of their stuff to the archive in Naples. And I wrote them. I haven't heard back yet. I don't know if I will.
Sure.
We were supposed to be there again. We were supposed to go in last April. We didn't make it. We were going to go in September, and now we postponed again because of all the crazy stuff.
Oh, I know.
So now, have you been back to any of these towns?
I have not, but in 2019, my brother Mark was able to go back to Carovile, and we have a cousin that's actually around our age, even though she's my second cousin and my mom's first cousin. She and her husband were there in Carovile, so they were able, because one of the dilemmas my parents had was my dad spoke Sicilian, my mom spoke Carovilese, and they really didn't teach us, we didn't learn Italian at the table. And actually it was an advantage to them because they could talk over us and secrets were told, and we had no idea whether they were talking about us or who knows, the weather, we don't know. Anyway, Mark went with his wife, and what was lovely, having somebody who, Angelina, our cousin, there, and her husband, Perino, could take them around. We also graciously, the person that now owns my grandparents' home allowed them to come in and take a look at the house, because my mom would only describe it. And we had an outside picture, but of course, in 1919, there were going to be no inside pictures of a house, and to get an idea of, you know, where they lived. And we have some lovely pictures and things that, memories that my brother brought back from Carovile. My parents had gone back several times, both to Carovile and to Sicily, to visit. I know that there's family in Sicily, Sadly, as you know, my parents died, we lost some track of them. Some of my mom's family, a few distant relatives may still live in Caraville. A group of them also emigrated to Canada. So we have a Canadian contingent of the family living in and around the Toronto area as well. So have some contact with them, but I have not been to either, although I do also, my cousin Margaret Ann on my father's side also went to visit Sicily and just absolutely loved it and was very much taken with the place. She's an artist, so just that artist's eye of looking at the landscapes and the antiquities and just being struck by all that was there. So.
I know. We went once like 25 years ago and I'm dying to go back. So you did DNA, right?
Yes, I did.
Did you, any ahas or interesting things come out of that?
Well, you know what, I'll show you the, let me bring up the admixture. What was interesting for me, Bob, was I'm now the only one in my family that's done this right now. I've been trying to get one of my two brothers to also do, I chose 23andMe after my own research on where I thought I might benefit the most. I did not do the health side. I just figured at my age, I'll be 72 this year. Whatever happens has happened, and knowing the stuff in the DNA was not going to be helpful. It would be noise rather than helpful. I was hoping my brother, so we could do the paternal part of the line. My dad used to always think he had a Spanish blood in him, and there is not any for me. So as I look at my DNA, I think what was interesting, I always suspected that we had Northern African blood. I just couldn't figure out how we couldn't, because where Sicily is located and knowing the history of Sicily, not only who took over the years, but just being a huge trading center, there was going to be, you know, official DNA swapping and unofficial DNA swapping over the centuries. And so how could there not be a mix from around the region? The interesting thing for me was this Iranian, Caucasian and Mesopotamian link. One of the things for 23andMe, they just said that right now, and again, they'll update if they have more people from those areas that'll also do DNA testing, that percentage could change or the links. So I found this very, you know, fascinating in terms of our own background. So I'm hoping that either my sister will also do DNA or one of my two brothers, because I know that we're not exactly a same mix. So it should come out similar, but it may have some differences in it. So you can kind of get a family look at things. So we'll see what happens with that. In terms of cousins and things, I have some first and second cousins that have come up. I have 23andMe does what several of the services do, allow you to connect and send a message. So I have been able to communicate. So it's interesting to me to see that over time that the family connections are pretty much all over the world. And I actually heard from some Italian second or third cousin who lives in Sweden. I would never have known if somebody was living in Sweden, and we communicated a little bit that way. We have a family mystery on the map. I have a person who, I bring this, it's small, but we'll, let me come back, forgot to do the basic thing. I have a person here, my dad's parents are right in this area where the cursor is going around. I have a person who showed up on the family tree. I wrote them, but have never heard back. And so it's showing a relative through what would have been a sibling for my father, but my father's remaining sibling, who's my aunt, never had any children. So the question for me was, either we have a deep, dark secret that never got out about my aunt, which is very hard for me to believe about a very talkative Clemente family. So, but given the time frame of the 1940s and whatever, I guess that wouldn't have been surprising. Or my other thought was, my grandfather worked on the railroad and he was here for several years, and he was not married at the time. He may have had a dalliance, I don't know, and given birth to someone that's out there. Or as 23andMe says, it may not be a person that you're related to at all. But unless this person responds back to me, I have no way of knowing. So we have this interesting little mystery on the tree. What I've tried to do when the information comes in is, if anyone's a second cousin that I don't know, because there's a couple second cousins, I know who they are and whatever, I usually send a hello and say, here's who my family is, and ask a few questions. And if they respond, I communicate. If not, you know, I just sort of let it go. So that's sort of what's happened with doing the genealogy. So it's also interesting. It offers another interesting way of, I think what it helps is, you know, when people say, well, our family has always been here, we are all 100% this. Mm. No. You know, the DNA testing will tell you that no, you're not. And it really allows you to expand your worldview and to think about what it is in our lives that compels us to stay or leave and go, and sort of that life journey that we all make. So it's fascinating.
Yeah, you know, you never know. Your father may have some Spanish, you know, because the autosomal only goes back so far. I mean, my grandmother had definitely, you know, they're Spanish, because I've been able to go so far back that I know they're Spanish in there. So, you know, it's always possible. I also did mine with living DNA, and they give you the paternal and maternal lines.
Yes.
And what struck me with that was my maternal line is like 96% from the Caucasus.
Yes.
There's nothing else in there.
Yes.
And it's, people, you know, it's surprising.
Right there.
Yeah. But how they wound up in Italy, you know, is a big mystery, because.
You only need one.
Yeah.
You
that's
only need
true.
One.
That's true. Yeah. And the paternal line makes a little bit more sense, although they kind of went through the like Romania and into the Switzerland. They were basically mountain people. So
yes.
they're that whole line, my whole paternal line, you see them going from one mountainous area of Europe into another.
I know.
But no Italian.
I no, well, actually, on my mom's dad, their last name is Lolly with an I. And talking with my cousin Adolf and his brother Giocondo, you know, they were telling me that because I've had a problem, I'm sort of at a barrier where I don't know what community to go to next to see if I can find records. And they said that they believed in the story within their side of the family was, they actually started in France as Lolly, L-A-L-L-Y, but since there's no Y in Italian, it became I. And so as they moved down, and what's fascinating, when I did part of their genealogy, one of the things about I was telling you before we started the Caravilli research, the Castiglione Caravilli research group on Facebook, have translated and made Excel files of all the families. So I'll show you in a moment how that's made my doing back genealogy almost a piece of cake compared to what I'm doing on my paternal side. And, but there's when I did, we went to visit them a couple of weeks ago and I wanted to take some genealogy, and because their mom is not related to me, I thought, well, I have these records, I'll see if I can go back. Well, with that and ancestry.com and their little leaves, I actually did trace them going back to at least Corsica, and which at the time might be part of that French connection. And so I was able to actually trace them back to France, and we may go a little farther. And we have someone in the family that I traced back to Gibraltar. So we, and again, that was because of other people putting their information in. And so trying to look at that connection makes also genealogy somewhat challenging as well. But let me take a moment and just show you, in case there's anyone who listens that comes from Cratovili, and there may be other groups that have done this. Let me bring up my I probably should have put this in the PDF. This will just show you the first, this is for people who work in ancestry.com will look familiar. So this is just a page for Mariano Gnocchi, and who lived in Castiglione. So when I knew about him, one of the things that was helpful is I was able, and I cut this off, but what they did in the Cratovili research group, and let me see if I can make this a little larger. What they've done is they brought in all the microfilm from Salt Lake City, from the Mormons, and Sam Lombardi and, oh gosh, Rosalind, I won't remember her last name right now. They originally took these, translated them, and then made Excel spreadsheets, which then they PDF'd. So I was able then, they have six types of files. So I was able to find Mariano with Euphrosinia and find all their children because someone else has read the records. And if I want to go back to the records, they actually gave me the record number. So if I go back in those years, I can more easily just go right to find the image. They also, because one thing I discovered, at least about my family, not everybody went to the main officials and recorded a birth or a death or a marriage, which was fascinating for me because my grandpa Luigi and his brothers and family lived in Cratovili for a while, but I can only find my grandfather and uncle in the records. And I know everybody else is there, but they're not in the civil records. So they're probably in the church records. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so you can find kids, and then the other way you can come down, and the marriage is a little small, but again, you can find marriages, then you have your father's and mother's names, and then death. So sometimes it's in death that I find missing children that were not in the birth record or vice versa. And so this is actually made building my mom's trees. I actually would laugh because I kept telling my husband, I said, this is too seductive. It's almost like Lay's potato chips. You can't just do one. I feel like everyone in Cratovili is related to everybody because you end up with all these kids and the kids of the kids. And it's easy then, besides the time that it takes to build the trees. And so this group has really, really helped. I can't imagine the work that it took them. And it's more than several people doing, getting the information, typing it in, making sure it was accurate, and then releasing it and everything. So there may be groups that have done, I think they have been similar, that will help some people do their genealogy better. So that's been really, really useful.
Yeah, that's really neat. Yeah, and I've seen a few things like that where
right. Right. No, I know they're not the only group that's ever done it, but I'm so thankful that
that's great.
Part of my family's really because it's really hard. I mean, it's just yesterday I was working on some things. I was looking for someone else, but accidentally found a missing child of my grandpa Baldassare's, going back to his grandfather, that I hadn't uncovered. And it just by accident, and fortunately, it's because, thank God, there was an index in the online book. So I came across the name and I went, oh, there's a Clemente in here. Is this a Clemente that I'm related to? And then I looked and went, oh my God, I am. And then knowing that, I could then enter that information and capture it. So, but that takes, as you know, takes a lot of time. And that was serendipity. I wasn't looking for her. I was actually looking for somebody else. So it just happened to be the same year. And I got lucky.
I've started that with my mom's family, Nicoletti. I have, I don't know, probably have about 120 records. Yes. And as I was going through it, I actually took the URL for the record that I found on the Antonati and put it in there. But it's a lot of work if you do it yourself.
It is a lot of work. And it's, you just sort of have to say, okay, today's the day I'm going to page through 300 records because there was no index.
Right, but
I'm going to go through, and I know enough at least where how to look for the name, where the names are located for each of the kind of records. And then I have my, thank goodness to Latter-day Saints. They have a wonderful Wikipedia, of which then I was able to get the translation, English translation of the document. So once I find someone, I can, you know, figure out what else it might be saying. So that's been helpful too.
Yeah, you know, the newer records, quote unquote, you know, from like the 1860s on, where I know some of the towns and stuff had like a pre-printed thing where they filled in the name and dates, right, and things like that. But when you get back to the 1810 and have to read somebody's chicken scratch, it's horrible.
No, and that's what happened the other day. And I'm not in the mood for this today. I cannot do this today. So I'll just come back later, because it's a different kind of dedication to have to kind of scan, yes, the handwriting enough that you can figure out, I'm not reading about the name of the town and the official. I'm now gotten to the actual person. Now, am I related to this person?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But you know, I tell people, I said, if you do it enough, you catch on to the, you know, the words that you need to understand.
No, absolutely. And I think that's what's happened over time. I mean, initially my cheat sheets were like, right, you know, like glued to me. Yeah. I don't need them as much anymore. And I was laughing the other day because when I was little, my grandpa Clemente tried to teach us to count in Italian, which we sort of could do as little kids. So now, of course, I have my cheat sheet with the numbers on it, but I don't need it as often anymore because now I've gotten some of the basics down. So he's probably laughing from wherever he may be at this point.
No, I know. We had the same thing. They taught us how to count in Italian.
Yeah.
Whenever, like you said, they didn't want us to know something, they would, you know, they
would know
to Italian.
Right.
Well, this has been great. This has been a lot of fun. I really appreciate you taking the time.
Oh, you're most welcome. My pleasure.
And I'm sure everybody listening got some good hints out of this. So,
well, I hope that they did, because it's actually a wonderful labor of love. And I think for me, a gift to give family and to uncover family so that they're known rather than lost.
Yep. I feel the same way.
Yeah.